Hello, listener. This is a quick note for all of you who are audio only on this one. This is a episode that is very visually focused. If you want to, if you're, you know, more interested in just doing audio, there is a follow-along PDF document you can get over on the show notes page. But I wanted to warn you up front because we're going to be referring to a lot of things that you're not going to be able to see here. If you don't know, we do have a YouTube version of this show, and so there is a visual element for most shows, but most shows are talking to people about their experience, and you don't need to see what we're showing on screen. So, future episodes, we'll be back to more audio-friendly type of things, but for now, just so you know, this will be a very visual episode. One reason that we call it contextual electronics is because we're trying to give you a sense of how electronics work in the real world. And I can't think of a more real-world thing than a design review with an applications engineer. If you don't know, an applications engineer is someone who works for the company you're usually buying stuff from, and they help you design that part into your product. And so I've worked with a lot of these over the years, but I never really had a good sense for what that interaction looked like, because as a college student or as a high school student, or really before you get into industry and before you have the dollars of your company behind you, you don't have a reason to interact with field applications engineers. Once you do, if you are so lucky, it's a wonderful resource. Really, the field applications engineers, they are experts in the parts that they cover, and they give you feedback and ideas that you just wouldn't think about otherwise. And so they are a wonderful resource if you can get access to them. Unfortunately, as a hobbyist or as someone who's maybe outside of the industry, you don't have them. Or even if you're in a different part of the industry, you might not have them. So I had the opportunity to talk to a field applications engineer from Quictel. Quictel is the company that makes cellular modems. They're based out of China. They make cellular modems. They're on the ABC board that we designed as part of Contextual Electronics. And I had a chance to talk with Roy Chen, who's one of the applications engineers here in the States. He's actually, or sorry, not in the States, in North America, because he's up in Toronto. And he's really great. So this episode is me getting feedback on the ABC design, which is this cellular Bluetooth board that we designed as part of the course. And I recorded it because when else do you get to see that? I never could have recorded the interactions I had with field applications engineers when I was working for a company. But you know, this is my show. This is my life. I get to record it. And Roy said it was okay. And so I'm really glad that we got to. So what this episode is basically Roy giving me feedback on this design. I had followed the design guide that's from Quictel. And so a lot of this is basically him kind of pointing out like, hey, you missed this part, or hey, you didn't do this part. But that interaction is super important, because having feedback and having a reaction to the thing that you designed, that can save you time, money, embarrassment. Well, it doesn't save me embarrassment, because it's actually me. It's Roy telling me, hey, Chris, you didn't do this right. But that's great. That's what I am happy to show here. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Roy Chen, field applications engineer from Quictel, and we'd love to hear what you think about it. So here we go with Roy. All right, so welcome to Contextual Electronics. Today we're talking to Roy from Quictel, and welcome, Roy. Thanks for joining me here. This is the first time we've done this kind of design review on camera like this. I'm really excited.
Yeah, also my pleasure. It's my first time too. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about using the BG95, EG91, all the parts that Quictel is making. I think are really exciting and are really good fit for this project we're working on. So we're going to be talking about it a little bit, but you're going to tell us a little bit about yourself to start with.
Yes. Okay. My pleasure to join today. Yeah. I'm Roy. I'm Toronto-based. Actually, I've been working with Quictel since 2010. This is my 11th year in Quictel. Wow. Yeah, at the first 2 years at Quictel, I was a hardware engineer, so which means I have a very strong hardware background. We can share a little bit later about designs.
Yeah.
And then nowadays, I'm in charge of technical sales for Northeast region, including Canada and the United States.
Nice. Yep. Yeah, I'm in Chicago, so that's why, it's a good fit.
Yes. Good. Our team also did a little bit of review about your schematic and the PCB. Mm-hmm. I think we can dive into this part.
Okay, great.
Yeah, first of all, the design is very impressive. Just in terms, because you're considered to have a you have a design for several module in one PCB board, like BG91, BG96, BG95. So we need to review this. You can, Now I'm sharing a PDF file. Mm-hmm. It's called the design review report.
Okay, is that a different window maybe?
You can see or
not? Maybe I think you have to share that different screen. So while you're doing that, let's just take a quick look at the, so I'll just, for people that are watching that maybe haven't seen it before, this is the board, this is the ABC board that's been designed. So while Roy is pulling up that other PDF, we can take a look at this. So this is the, the multiple modules. And the idea here is that on the back side, we have, basically the idea is that it's a sandwich of, some kind of daughter card, and then the main module itself, and those two things go together to plug in to access the cellular capabilities and also the Bluetooth capabilities of the NRF52 that's on board. So yeah, so these are the things that are, this is what we've been doing as part of Contextual Electronics. This is the board we've been designing, and I'm excited to see this report. So it looks like Roy pulled it up here. So here we go.
Yep.
Great.
Okay. Let's go. Yeah. Normally. Okay, give me 1 second.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, so actually you had a good design for the power. Just here, you pay attention. We recommend customer to add in one zero diode. Mm-hmm. So this is like, because the power for the module is between different module. BG96, BG91, BG95, those three modules have a little bit slight different of the power supply range.
Okay.
So BG96, because it support 2G, so the power range from 3.3 to 4.3. Mm. And if some customer, they are going to use in the BG95 M2, which is excluded 2G, so the power range is between 2.8 to 4.6. Mm-hmm. So cool, more wide range. And the typical value for BG96 is 3.8. Mm-hmm. So which is now you did a very good, is 3.8 here.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good point too. I kind of stressed over that a little bit because the BQ25895, which is the charger chip, it has this kind of soft upper range. So if you don't have a battery plugged in, it's meant to obviously charge the battery, but then it's this kind of range that can go anywhere from pretty much what the battery voltage is. So wherever the battery is in its life cycle, if there's no battery there, it kind of goes to the top of its range thinking like, hey, I'm trying to charge, it might be at 4.4 instead of 4.3, like you're saying. So it sounds like the Zener there, like you're saying, would help to protect the chip in that in that scenario.
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
Okay. For the USB port, for the most of application using the BG96, BG95, they may use the USB port because USB port is for 8 command, for GPS, mm-hmm. and also for software debugging and firmware updating. Yeah, which is very important for the customer. If they don't have USB port connecting with the Mac processor, we also recommend the customer to have this port be reserved as a test point.
Okay.
Yeah, which in the future when they do the certification at the Verizon, AT&T, mm-hmm. they require to get some test log, which mm-hmm. USB port is the only source.
Got it. Okay, so that's a really good point too, and I'd love to hear about certification a little bit more mm-hmm. after we go over the review. As the to clue people into what that have not looked at the design before. This is basically there's a second USB port. The first USB port is for this is for charging the battery. The USB-C is talking to the battery and also the NRF52. NRF52 talks through a level translator to the BG95, BG96, EG91. But then I decided to put a second USB-B micro on here to talk directly to that port in order to, like you said, software, debugging, all that stuff. And then also some people might just want to use the chip by itself, and that's also a possibility. So okay, great.
Good. So in terms of the SIM card UART port, which is you had a good design, and because you already put the voltage shift, mm-hmm. so between the microprocessor and the module, which is 1.8 the chip IOs.
That was easy. Okay. I just copied the app note. I mean, that's really a lot of my MO was just follow the app notes. There's a really good hardware design guide, which I really appreciated from Quicktel for each of these parts. So that was helpful.
Yep. Okay. For the RF parts, I will go diving a little bit after this PDF. And for sure, just to need to pay attention for the 2G mode, the current of module will be reached 1.8, 1.6.
Okay.
This is GSM behavior.
Yep. Yeah, those really big spikes, and basically it draws on the battery, and also you need to make sure your traces are, okay.
And then you need to have a GPS and the main antenna be matching the impedance for 550 ohm, which this many customers, they avoid or they ignore this. And then when they produce the PCB board, maybe the thickness of PCB board is 1.6 or 1.0. Yep. So the trace layout, the layout should be different. We'll go deeper a little bit about the RF design recommendation.
That'd be great, yeah.
Yeah, for next one is ADC, because for BGN6 has two ADC ports, BGN5 has only one, and this the voltage should never exceed 1.8. So divide by,
So that was just a generic, voltage monitor divider there. So at least if nothing else, if I'm going to keep that, then I need to change the ratio. I think I just did a 1-to-1 ratio, so it would only get it to half mark, but it would be not as useful in that case.
Yeah. Okay. You can just put this as reserved, and then just put the DNP.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Great. Next one, USB boot. USB boot is for emergency downloading purpose.
Okay.
Which normally this means it's open.
Okay.
Only when module they run abnormal mode and it never got recovered, so you have to move this pin to high for the downloading.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Okay. Those two pins, if you're not using, you can reserve the PSM indicator. Is output. This is for microprocessor. They can detect if module is at the PSM mode or not.
Okay. And what is PSM mode?
PSM mode is power safe mode.
Okay.
It's the also you can consider this as a deep sleeping mode.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Yeah. So right now it's showing just on my schematic here so it's just DNP. So you're saying that maybe hooking that over to a microcontroller would be prudent just in case I ever want to use it. Okay. That's really good.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. The next one is the W disable. This is a airplane mode to enable, which is input for the module. So, when the module, it's a very similar as our cell phone, you have airplane mode.
Mm-hmm.
When you turn to the airplane mode, you're not able to receive and send the message.
Uh-huh.
So this is this is one type of power safe mode.
Okay.
But just to disable the RF parts.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a good thing to have there.
And the right side is AP ready. This is input, actually. This is a input pin from the microprocessor.
Uh-huh.
So when the microprocessor is in the sleeping mode, they can let the module know. This is like the pin to trigger the UART port. You know, when the module, when the microprocessor at the sleeping mode, the CPU is not able to process any data to receive any data. And in one scenario is when the module receives message or the data incoming. So the module can detect or wake up the microprocessor, hey, this is the message you should to receive and you should to process. Then they go to wake up the UART port.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So what would you say? I mean, how critical is that? I mean, in terms of functionality, is that more like a nice to have, or is that you should definitely, in all these cases, are these all, you should always have these hooked to the microcontroller, or is it more if you want this function and it's specific to your needs, then you should do it?
Yeah, so very few customers, they may have very sensitive on the power consumption for both microprocessor and the whole system. So they may have this pin to connect to the microprocessor because they want to put the microprocessor is always lower sleeping mode.
Uh-huh,
also, you have another alternative way to achieve the lower power consumption. Like say you can cut off the power of the module. You can put the power safe mode. And also STMicro, NXP Micro, they also very low energy profile, which is good enough.
Yeah, and that is kind of the thinking there, that to have a kind of supervisory micro, in this case the NRF52 is pretty low as well, being able to just kind of go into deep sleep and then shut the cellular all the way down. So it is using it more like a modem as well. I should state for people that haven't seen these parts before, there's a full ARM core, there's a full ARM processor inside there that you can use as an applications processor for a lot of these, right?
This is about a schematic, and then we can. I have another point I want to show. You can see my screen.
Yep. This is the slideshow, right? That's what you're trying.
This slide, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Do I need to full screen? Let me see.
That might be helpful. Yeah. I think this is the presentation view, so that's why it's not full screen.
Okay. I think it's okay.
Yeah, that's okay there.
So that's okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
But now it's better, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yep.
Yeah. So also part of schematic for the antenna design. So for the main antenna, which you already reserved the pi matching, which is good.
Yep.
And because this is normally for the testing and the, to match antenna, sometime when they have a second harmonic interference, so they have adding some capacitor or inductor to reduce it. For the GNS antenna, so I realized you have this antenna is only for passive antenna. I don't know, for your application, do you need a active antenna in the future or no?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. It was more of a placeholder. Honestly, at the beginning, I'm not planning on using it. But that's, I mean, in terms of a placeholder, that is a great time to think about it. So you're saying to maybe put in a spot for an amplifier or something like that there?
Actually, Morge has a RNA, lower noise amplifier already built in. So what you need only have the power for the power down for the antenna, which is my left, my right side is VDD, 3.3 volt, and then you have a little bit of large 10 ohm resistor, and then large inductor, so which is enough.
Okay, and that, so then how does that actually look on the physical side? So like, if the antenna, does the antenna have, is it not like a UFL or something like that? Or is it just coupled in to the actual coaxial connection there?
Which is that water is not any impact, just to hear it is for the power only.
Okay.
And just to, you have a little bit increased the size of your PCB board because the resistor we recommend is 0805.
Okay. Yep.
And the inductor can be 0603. Mm-hmm. And there's another one capacitor, which for the power filter.
Yeah. And yeah. Then, so it is pretty tight up in that area. So that is maybe the reason not to. But I think that either way, that's something to consider and something to look at. So that's great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Next one, for the customer, they do not have USB port, but they are using the GPS application, and we offered one option by software. We have the, you know, when using GPS, you need to have a NEMA sentence, N-E-M-A, which is it's better to have the full sentence output, like every second you refresh in the sentence location.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have the USB port, which you're not able to get from the main port, the main port only reports one sentence by inquiry.
Okay, and so it's like a polling versus a reporting kind of idea?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And then we have another option is UR3. The third UR port is able to have the output like same feature as the USB port if you don't have a USB port. Uh-huh. So this is like option for your next design or maybe when you need the GPS functionality.
Okay, that's great to know. Yeah, so right now the modem's UR3, I believe, goes up to the daughter card. So I would think that if we need to use that, maybe we could use that as a reporting and just tie it up through the daughter card back down to,
Yes, something. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great.
But don't need to worry because also without your UR port, you can also able to get the GPS location or acquisition from the main port.
Right,
the main
so you UR just, port. It's just, you have to pull it and you say, hey, what is your update? What is your update?
Correct,
that kind of idea, yep.
Yes.
Okay, yes. That's great.
Our next one, we can jump to the PCB.
Sure. And I'm gonna pull mine up on my screen as well in case there.
Yeah.
So I had only sent so people know I had sent Roy the PDF of the Gerbers, basically, or PDF output. So we'll actually have access to the 3D view here if you want to take a look at that. So, yeah. Okay. Go ahead, though.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of the footprint of the 3 module, mm-hmm. I noticed that you have this module is like, maybe you're referring to BitNet 6,
mm-hmm. yep.
which BitNet 6 is like a middle size, compatible with BitNet 5. That's the only one thing we need to pay attention, because when you do the each 91 is Cat 1 module, then the size, the outline is a little large than BitNet 6.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So yeah. So same footprint, but the actual physical outline, you're saying?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So which you can refer to the one here in the top.
Yeah.
So they have the outline for different module.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, and also on the module, physical on the module, on each 91 module, the four corner has four ground pins.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so, like, looking at the 3D model here too, so that might be one of the biggest. So right now, I had talked to Quicktel about I have BG95 in house right now. That's what's going to go in my prototype. But yeah, you could see that it is pretty tight there. So especially, I would say the biggest concern are, I'm not sure what the gap difference is, but this right here, I really squeeze that in. So that one's going to be the biggest one. So that's good. That's good to know. So I think initial testing, I'll probably leave it. But then, yeah, any kind of revisions, I'm going to have to probably move stuff around if I want to get access to the Cat 1 capabilities.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
For the next page, I'm showing the difference between the BG96 and BG95.
There we go.
Yeah. So there is two pin difference between two module. It's one's ADC pin, which you already designed like for the as a test point.
Yep.
And another is a reset pin, which is critical for the module for both. And then ADC pin on BG96, there's two individual ADC 1, ADC 2, but for BG95, there's only one. And also, because actually BG95 inside of those two pins connecting the same one pin to the chipset.
Okay, so it's labeled differently externally, but then with the thing that's actually, where the resource is actually going to internally on the silicon. Is the same rather?
Yes.
Okay.
And also the same thing for the reset pin, the power key pin for BG95.
Mm-hmm.
Which we don't recommend. The power key should never put down to the GND permanently. This is very important.
Should never you should never be pulled. So like the pull, like if you were gonna just tie it low, always, you mean?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. You cannot do this because you know several customers they just try, because sometimes you have lack of GPIO pin from microprocessor. You don't have those pins to control the module and say, let's just put down
all the time, right? And we'll turn off the software or something.
Yeah, it's like, yes, ugh. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because for the most, in the past, but almost for the all of the Cat 1, Cat 4, 3G, 2G module, it's the same architecture, so which put down, the module will be automatically turned on.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, BG95, it's not applied to. So you have to control power key, and then to pull it down and then pull up back.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It is that, it's that pulse that is in the hardware design guide, and it's inverted as well. It's, there's like just an NPN inverter that drives.
Yes.
It.
Yes. Yeah. And also inside the chipset, baseband of the Qualcomm chipset.
Mm-hmm.
And there we distinguish those two, the functionality by software. Like if you press longer of this pin, the module is going to reboot.
Oh, really? Okay, so it's like a ad hoc reset button.
correct. Huh. Yes.
Oh, so like that here, that would really not work well then if you tied it to ground, huh?
Yes. So it's going to reboot always.
Yeah. So that'd be a bad startup time.
Yeah. So only this is you need to pay attention. The big difference between two modules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the next one, here's the one, another pin called the PON trigger.
Mm-hmm.
This means only for BG95, we added this pin to wake up the module from PSM mode.
Okay.
Yeah, normally you have the way to, because like I also need I'd like to introduce a little bit about what Merge doing during the PSM mode.
Okay, sure.
So during the PSM mode, the Merge's power consumption is below 10 microamp. It's very low. It's like almost turned off. And then during this mode, the modules or every part is sleeping. Only the flash memories is keeping this information on the network registration.
And it's not able to like receive data or calls or anything like that. It's not in a receive mode.
Correct. Yeah. And totally correct. Yes. And then when you need to wake up module, you have to operate as the first time to power on the module, to power key. Mm-hmm. And then you have the power key to turn on the module.
Yep.
And then for the BGN5, besides the power key, you have another option. This is a power on trigger to wake up the module. This is an additional pin for the BGN5. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so this is another one where I should be... So is this the kind of case where I should be doing, like the power key, I should have like an inverter and driving that? I think one of the problems is that I was starting from a BG96 footprint on board.
Yeah.
But then there are some pin differences, so that's on me for not having the pin differences labeled here on the BG95.
Yeah. On your current design, which is good, mm-hmm. and you can also use the power key to trigger the module from wake up from the PSM mode.
Uh-huh. So you put it into PSM mode from software and then wake it up with hardware using power key?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So the idea is that the feature difference is that you could also have a little bit more hardware control using this pin that you're talking about.
Yes. The wake up from PSM mode, they have two options. One, either the timer, PSM mode is controlled. The timer is controlled by network.
Okay.
And then they'll be wake up when the timer runs out. And also the hardware, like for example, you need to have a wake up module to do something manually, so you need to wake up by the hardware, which there's two options. It's always available.
Okay, that's great. Okay. Yeah, it's good. It's good. There's a lot of options. It's just kind of making sure. I think the one thing that I had my firmware engineer Eric, who's a friend on a different video I'd done, and one thing he always talks about is like, make sure there's at least one way that you can always have an escape mode and like get things working. And I would think that, you know, like having at least one way to reset the chip and get it into the right mode is really important.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. Next one, this is like a little bit design tips for the SIM card.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, personally, I had a very good experience once I was supporting one of customer. They made a design for the SIM card. They also 100% following our design guide. Mm-hmm. So added the capacitor and also added the ESD. Mm-hmm. But they didn't pay attention about the ESD components, which here we are mentioning. The parasitic capacitance should not more than 15 PFA. So this is very important because, you know, the SIM card have two kind of voltage, either 1.8 or 3.0.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, both is 1.8.
Okay.
And then, you know, here you have a capacitor, you have a ESD. When you design in parallel, the capacitance is going to increase, right?
Got it.
And then they're going to delay.
So is there a number, like a total number of the total capacitance value that should be on there between the diode and the
So here, cap? Yeah, we put here is 33 plus 15, plus 15, which is a no more than 45, yes.
Got it. Okay, great.
Yeah. So otherwise, the data, like a clock data, is going to delay.
It's going to have rounded edges and, you know, delays times. Yeah, because it expects, basically, it's almost like a serial protocol where it's sending out, basically, the modem is talking to it, and then it's expecting some response within a certain amount of window, right?
Yeah. This is very critical. Yeah. This part is about RF design. We provide RF layout application nodes.
Oh, great! Yeah,
I'm going to open this one.
Okay, great. And I'll pull up while you're pulling that up. I'll show the layout where we are here. So, based on the stack up, so we're using JLC, the 2313 process, and so looking at the backside here. Basically, what I had calculated using my tools were design rules here. So the design rules for RF 0.2 millimeter space, 0.2 millimeter trace. And that was going to get us, I think it was like 50.3 ohms based on a coplanar waveguide design. So that's where my numbers had come from as a starting point. I'm sure I could have been wrong. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we can review it from the page.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Can you zoom in a little bit on that, please?
Can you see now?
Yep.
Better?
That's great. Yep.
Yep. So here is we noticed that here the power you are designed for to the module,
mm-hmm.
and we recommend that the power, the voltage, the widen should not no less than 2 millimeter.
Okay.
Yeah. And if for some customer they need a longer, and also, but also very important because you have you're doing the four layer design, which is it's good enough.
And so just to be clear, that is, I think that's on the, I'm just looking at the design here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to, so there's two power areas. Is that, do you know if that's the RF?
RF and the baseband, yes.
Yeah. So, but is that the RF or the baseband input that you're talking about there?
Yes. This is baseband. Yes. This is baseband.
Huh. So I thought that's here, the lower left corner. Is that right? Of the
monitor. This is a top, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
This part, your screen, this third part is okay.
Okay. All right. So then you're talking about, sorry.
The RF. The RF.
Yeah, so the RF section up here you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I make this a little bit easier for people to see too. So I'll turn on high contrast mode. And so just for clarity, this is the outside of the module here. If we look at the, I guess I don't have the backside silk turned on. There's the edge of the module. So this is the top right corner. Oh, this is flipped view. Sorry. I'll flip. I put the module on the backside, so it's a little confusing. So then that's why that looked a little different here. So you're talking about this section here, and
correct.
You're saying the trace going to the 3.8 volt rail should be 2 millimeters minimum?
2 millimeter, yeah, at least.
Okay, great. That's good to know. So then basically mm-hmm. I could change that in the in my design rules to say, so this right now is, oh wow, how would you even get 2 millimeters? Would it just be a ground pour or what? I guess
you get
ground pour pretty easily.
So those two pins should connect directly, like right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because so you're saying like just have? You mean the two pins connecting directly into the ground?
Yeah. Pour? Yes. Yes.
Okay.
To the power. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I'll definitely make that change.
Okay. So next one is about the used SIM card.
Mm-hmm.
We noticed that here, the power for SIM card VDD and the ground
uh-huh.
more than 20 mil. I don't know, maybe here, it's just maybe this is a 12 or some 16.
Okay.
This is,
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. So that's to show mine here, so that's, so the SIM card reader is on the front side,
mm-hmm.
and this is the backwards from all that. So you're saying that the power going to that pin specifically, so that, and it is kind of interesting that the ground and power are both sent from the module itself. So there's USIM ground and USIM power that are both sent directly to the SIM card instead of just giving it like the 3v3 or 3v8 from the rest of the board.
Yes. Yeah, because the reason we recommend this way is the design on this way, because we had experience on our module in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Several customers, the PCB board is more complicated than yours, and they have a digital ground, they have analog ground, maybe I have another ground.
Yeah.
So once one customer, they connect the ground to the analog ground, which is it's not matching, so it's always like the SIM card is mismatching fail. So which means now, if even the pin inside the module is connecting directly to the main ground, but we recommend customers using the SIM ground.
Got it. Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, yep. and just to have a known flow, and then for troubleshooting as correct. An applications yeah. engineer, I'm sure you can be like, well, you didn't do this thing, and so that's a good place to start as a troubleshooting yeah. method. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's good to know. Yeah, you're right. This is like that's 3.5 mil trace. That's way too small. So okay.
Yeah.
How much power does a SIM card usually take?
It's very small. Maybe yeah. just a few milliamps.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So just as a general design rule, you're saying move it up to yeah. a larger trace just to make it easier, make mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay. Next one I want to say, yeah. So here is a little bit layout suggestion for the SIM card circuit. Mm-hmm. And then you have from the module pins, and then you have series 0 ohm. Mm-hmm. And then two parallel 33 capacitor, and then EST, and then connector.
Yeah, okay.
So this is like this. We recommend this sequence.
Oh, you're saying the order of...
The order, yeah, from the trace.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah. So some of this might have gotten shuffled as I was moving between different... And I did flip mm-hmm. the board view back here just so people are clear. But you're saying, so we're kind of looking at the same areas here now. So you're saying that because, so what was the order again?
From the module, you are looking from module go first to the 0 ohm.
Okay.
And then capacitor.
I see. Okay. So the,
it's the same as the, your, is like following the sequence of the schematic.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So for the reset line here, so USIM reset goes to resistor.
Yeah, resistor to the capacitor.
Capacitor, got it. And that would be C42. Highlight that here. So C42, and then finally go to the connector. So yeah, it looks like this one.
And then you also need to pass the ESD, mm-hmm. and then to the connector.
Yeah, so it looks like this. Yeah, so this is the ESD, and then which is the one to go to the connector? So then this one, I see, because of, yeah, so how that's all hooking together. So this is finally getting to the connector down here. So it's mm-hmm. it's kind of hopping around a bit. So, okay. And what is the reasoning before that that ordering? Just as in case you need to put like resistance in line later instead of the 0 ohm?
Because in some case, in order to design, like according to the mechanical, sometime you have a large or longer trace which need to go from module to the SIM card. Uh-huh. So we have to say this way, you have to keep each pin as a very similar distance, similar length, and then you have a similar design architecture.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's great.
And then we also mentioned here the main power trace should be away from the SIM card signal.
Okay. Yeah. And why, that's just in case there's any like noise that couples between the
correct.
Two,
yes. Just for noise or the power drop, something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How sensitive are SIM cards?
It's like, I've actually for CAT1, I think it's very less. Mm-hmm. Because in some time for 2G, for CAT1 or CAT4, you're sending the large data, the module is power consuming large power consumption.
Okay.
Which causes a massive interference, which that part maybe is more impact. Mm-hmm. But for this CAT1, I think this is just to say, as long as you have the space, you're able to make this happen. Mm-hmm. So keep this as far as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I think that the, like in a 2G, if you have these huge swings of current, you're also going to have mm-hmm. the equivalent inductance that happens in coupling to different things. So EMI that happens. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So here is the part for the USB. Mm-hmm. So we recommend you have this is in differential pairs. Mm-hmm. And then between those two USB ports should be surrounded by the ground. I don't know if possible.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. So let me pull that up on here. So that's mm-hmm. that's coming in on the back side of this design. And so these did change a little bit. I got some feedback from the PCB house that my space to drill holes was a little bit low. So you're saying though, like, so then it comes in here. So this has ground all around it, but then on the front side, now this is isolated here.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Okay, so that would be, that's actually not too bad, because then I could just literally drop a, if I can find space for a ground plug here, then I can fill all that in. So that's really good to know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely work on that.
Good.
Yeah. Actually, I could probably even do that here. There we go. I think I got it. Yeah, almost. Mm. Yeah. Okay, great.
Good. Yeah, for the next one is about RF parts. Here, I think you consider about the mechanical or the like interference between this screw hole. Mm-hmm. You have this layout.
Yeah,
it's a little like a curvy, and I don't know if possible. Do you like put this a little bit away, because and then you keep the trace RF trace away from the power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're thinking maybe have it, to show people.
Like say maybe you can reorganize the capacitor or the resistor of the RF, and then go straight from a left side, not to top.
Mm-hmm. So pin 49, you're saying to go from pin 49 up to the, this is the UFL connector.
Here. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so I think the main problem is just that the module edge is right here. And so to get an actual PI filter in there was very difficult. Now, I guess one thing we could do is I could do more of a straight shot and then, you know, remove the PI filter, but then that has its own risks of, you know, it's likely that you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. Actually, on your design, because this trace is very short, I mean, total maybe less than one centimeter, 10 millimeter. Yeah. Which is should be enough. So we have a much slightly cable loss, and also you did a very good design on the ground pins, ground vias, and I'm going to share you another PDF.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's one thing that it was hard to kind of get in here. It was tough to get the vias, and definitely like I was thinking about it being right over top of the power, and that's. That's just a function of like the fact that there's not much room to get other stuff in here. So I did have, I guess this is a capacitor here, and this is just kind of the range of different parts. So I guess I could remove some of these. I had a bunch of like really large. I guess on the top side I have really large bulk capacitors here. Off here, but I had all these caps, but nothing could fit up here where the RF power is. And that was really the problem for a lot of this, is just that there was not room for the power even on the back side.
I see.
So like right, that would have been up in here. So and also the height restriction. So I have a height restriction of 1.5 millimeters. So what I tried to do is have I switched from that 1210 or whatever that larger package was. I think maybe 2512. Down to 0603, but I have a bunch of them in parallel because I've experienced in the past of having brownouts due to, you know, during transmit and thinking about Cat 1 being a little bit more stringent than a Cat M1. That's why I wanted to have a bunch of parallel capacitors there.
Okay, good.
All right, so you said you're going to show another PDF here.
Yes, here. Okay. So this is a generic RF design recommendation. Which this part for the schematic, we have PI matching recommended, which is same as your design. And then here, this is called Klempner design. So here we did a simulation about the high thickness of PCB board is 1.6. And then what's the trace, what's the width, and what's the clean ratio we should do design.
That's an interesting difference too, because so the stack up that I'm using is actually it's only 0.1 millimeters versus 1.6 millimeters, and so like you talk about the difference in trace sizes is like significant, and so that's why I think if you do a two layer design and you have that thicker trace, the thicker board thickness, you can make a much thicker trace, which also fits that coplanar waveguide better. But in this case, I actually ended up, if you look at the design here, I ended up necking all these down because I had to use this thinner trace in order to hit 50 ohms.
Yeah,
these are like some things to neck the back, you know, to go back from a thin trace to a thicker pad. Normally, I would try and get a thicker trace that matches the size of the 0402 components. Mm-hmm. But in this case, since I'm using a low cost board house, I can't define the stack up myself. So I think the answer normally would be, you know, define your own stack up, do your own thing. But I'm a cheapskate. So
that makes sense. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Here, just to say, pay attention on the design. Like we recommend here, like as you did, you have several VRs, ground VRs between those RF cable. Mm-hmm. This is to create a rule for the ground signal to get feedback, right?
Yeah.
This is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of trouble with those SMA connectors that you show in that drawing there, actually. Not because of the SMA connectors were fine, the trace was, you know, the correct width and everything like that. It was actually because right when the thinner trace hits that really big mount point, so like the landing there, mm-hmm. that's actually been my problem in the past, where you have this huge discontinuity because it's like the trace is happy, it's happy, it's happy, and then it sees this huge bulk of copper, and it's like, I don't know what the impedance is anymore. And then, you know... You know, especially like when you're doing gigahertz level designs, it really starts to matter. Like in the megahertz, it's usually, you know, the hundreds of megahertz, it's okay. But the higher frequency stuff can really start. I'm not sure what bands are up in there, but it can really start to mess with your signal integrity.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So this is just a general for the RF design. I think right here, back here. Yeah, that's all about your schematic and the PCB layout review. Mm-hmm. And then for the customer who needs more information, we have here the download the link. Mm-hmm. So for three modules.
Great. Yeah. That's really great. So what about, so you'd mentioned the, you know, some of the certification stuff. So talking, sending off to Verizon, AT&T, things like that. What does that process usually look like for people that are interested in that sort of thing?
Yeah. First of all, the module is Verizon, AT&T, PDCIP, FCC approved. And then we do the certification for Verizon. Now, Verizon, you know, during the pandemic, so they changed the way how they certify device and module.
Okay.
They put a very difficulty for the module and both module and the device. Mm-hmm. And in the past, you have to be sit on the lab, in the lab, and then during two weeks for the device certification. Nowadays, they simplify the process for the device, but they more complicated, make complicated for the module.
Right. It sucks for QuickTel. It's great for me, right?
So
how's it gotten more stringent? It's just more in-depth look at the transmission characteristics of the RF front end, or how does that end up impacting things?
So for the Verizon, take example for the Verizon certification. So now they have like few cases. It's more network related, and the one one of them is very like a mandatory case is called a data file or over the air upgrade. Mm-hmm. So with the defaulter, a folder firmware, and this part, and then for the old customer, once you have the account on the called the Open Development Protocol, and then you have account, you're able to submit your device information to tell them which module you are using, and then you will download the test case.
Okay.
And then you can do the test in your office, and then submit.
Really? Oh, that's great.
And you can submit over test log, and then because also every test will be linked to the browser server. They also they can monitor the test, the process, and what did you do, what firmware you're using, like kind of this.
Okay, that's great. And now, so that's actually really critical too. That's why you said earlier in this recording that you need to have that USB connection so that you can log the data, get the firmware if you need a different firmware set in there to make sure you're passing all these tests.
Yes. And then we have in QuickTel, we have one expert who in charge of the certification. Mm-hmm. And then we can introduce to you by email. His name is Yong. He's been in this industry for about 15 years.
Wow.
He knows all of the key people in the Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Mm-hmm. And in QuickTel, we have certified about 50, more than 50 devices in North America last year. And
that's great. Yeah.
And I mean, like different skills, different variants like this, mm-hmm. from KETA 1, Nerve IoT, KETA 1, KETA 4, KETA 6, and also KETA 18. Now we're also working on 5G as well.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah. And I think I mentioned the roadmap. I think I may have looked at it on the video a little bit, but I really like the idea of these, like, mostly pin compatible, you know, like there are some differences as we talked through, but like, I really like that idea of like being able to just kind of swap out the module that's on there. So I really hope that Quicktel keeps doing that. I think that's a great like upgrade path for future modules. And, you know, instead of redesigning the whole product on my side, it's really just buy a different part, solder it down, and then it becomes this different technology. That really is helpful. And that already kind of exists for different regions and different, you know, capabilities and stuff like that. But I really appreciate that in the module makers. I think that's a lot of the value.
Yeah, we have several options that are compatible from KETA 1 to, you can do from 2G to KETA M1 or KETA 1. And you also even KETA 4. And also we have KETA 4 to KETA 1 and then different a little large. And also in the future, we have M.2, Mini PCIe, M.2 is kind of up to 5G, so also it's compatible. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, and I described the Cat 1, Cat 4, Cat M1 stuff like that. But could you give a quick rundown for people that don't know what that is that might be watching this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like our cell phone, we can consider first our cell phone is kind of about Cat 4. You can do the video streaming, you can do the video call. So which the Cat 4 is the uplink is 50 meg, download the 100 meg Mbps. So, and for the like application for the video streaming, so Cat 4 is suitable. And for the customer, they're doing the like a tiny data and maybe send some picture. That's the maximum, like when you have 2 meg or some file. The Cat 1 is enough. And also Cat 1, Cat 4, the coverage is it's already there for a long time.
Yeah,
forever.
Right. Yeah, and that's actually a reason that I explained when I was starting this stuff as well, like that I was interested in the swap is that Cat M1, even though it is out and is broadly available, it's not available everywhere. And being able to switch to Cat 1 in certain places and certain, you might be able to look at your phone and say, hey, I've got signal. And then Cat M1, your little device doesn't work yet. And, you know, it's on the way, but it might not be there yet.
Actually, because Cat M1 has already been announced and then deployed since about 2 years ago. Now the coverage in North America and Canada, including US and Canada, is quite a very match already. Mm-hmm. So based on our customer, because we all been shipped about more than 5 million, maybe 8 million already for Cat M1 in the North America, which the feedback is very good, very positive for the coverage.
Good.
And then also for Cat M1, the penetration is network penetration is better than Cat M1 because the sensitivity is below -100, -110 like this. Mm-hmm. And then for the most application, like we call IoT M2M, the people doesn't need to higher data rate, sending only piece of data information once a day, once a week.
Yep.
And then Cat M1 will be a very good option for like a metering application. Lighting. We have a customer like doing the lighting, street lighting.
Lighting. Industrial lighting. Okay.
Industrial lighting.
Not like your light bulb is not cellular connected, but it's someone's like light ballast in a gymnasium or like a factory might be.
They call this smart city.
And I guess light like street lights, right? That makes sense.
Street lights. And then because
the Wi-Fi in the middle of the road.
the reason of this market is booming because the cost of Cat M1 is getting down and lower and lower. Yep. And then they are able to replace the gateway, which is used to the resolution 1 to 6 or maybe 1 to 10, 1 to 100 of gateway in between the each unit they communicate with the short range or Zigbee. Mm-hmm. And now with the Cat M1, the cost can be they can able to install the for all the unit. Mm-hmm. So then I also and the Cat M1 for my personal understanding, 2G is there for some country. They have if they keep in 2G, they may not to implement Cat M1 because 2G Cat M1 is also supporting the mobility. You can do the movement for the tracker. This can do with Cat M1.
Right. And you see that a lot with like the SIM 800, SIM 900, like the small modules. A lot of the maker boards that are out there use those still. And they are active a lot of places, but some of the, at least in the US, a lot of that is getting shut down and getting, the band, or sorry, the, uh, the white space is getting moved around and allocated to different things.
Yeah, for the country like U.S., they shut down 2G. Maybe they are the first country shut down 2G. So that reason, they more prefer to have kind of one network coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then T-Mobile, the first carrier implemented LTE. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was for the lighting project in Las mm-hmm. Vegas. It's first city program. And also Europe, for the country, they keep 2G. They prefer to have Narrowband LTE because, like to say, Narrowband LTE is kind of like technology to replace short range, like Zigbee, Bluetooth, a 900 mega, 433 mega. Mm-hmm. So those kind of chip can be replaced by Narrowband LTE because the cost is similar. Mm-hmm. And also for the Zigbee or LoRa, this technology, you need to have a central network to be built.
Yeah. So one of the thoughts for this sandwich, you know, this module I'm thinking about making is, you know, maybe throw a LoRa module on there as well to extend it capabilities. But like you're saying, you need to have some kind of node that basically acts as the capture for all the smaller nodes, and then maybe bundles it up, puts it into a network packet, and sends it up to a server. So there is a lot of overhead there. Yeah.
You have to have the central, like a network, to create a center. Yeah. An individual
like
center.
Hub and spoke instead of just like each node is be able to talk directly back. So
yes. By using cellular, which is simple, just to plug and play, mm-hmm. this is the most advantage and the beauty for the cellular module.
That's great. Being able to get a signal anywhere, well, from almost anywhere, you know, deep wilderness, you got to go to a satellite, I think. But any city, it's especially like you said, asset tracking, like being able to track where your food order is throughout the city. It's like, you know, that doesn't come for free. That someone's got a cell modem on their device, on their bike, or, you know, their caviar bike or whatever. So,
Here in my screen, I'm sharing the latest. This data is up to June 1st.
Uh-huh. Oh, great.
This is about mapping network development worldwide. You can see there's the purple colors cover both North America and Canada and the South America. Mm-hmm. And also Mexico is using AT&T network. So it's kind of one plus Narrowband LTE. And Europe is kind of mixed. So it's kind of one Narrowband LTE. And China, we also going to have kind of one both. Both
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And Australia is a pure KM1. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that's interesting as well, because like even though these are the technologies, the KM1 and NB-IoT are like the two different types of technologies. Those are the frequencies that they use, all that stuff. But then there's also frequencies within those bands as well that are, I don't know, do those cross over more than some of the GSM stuff used to? Because I know that there's different modules types that you need to get in North America versus worldwide and those kind of things.
They have several mainstream bands they're using for North America. The band 12, 13, mm-hmm. 5 is the main band, which is all of them is a low band. It's about 700 meg. Mm-hmm. And then they are doing like a band 66, band 71. It's uh-huh. also about 750. Yeah, it's below the frequency of the GSM. And which it requires a longer large size of antenna design, which is also important for the customer who wants to achieve the tiny size of the product. They have to consider about the antenna size as well.
Right. Yeah, it's always that weird trade-off of like, yeah, you need the bigger antenna, but also then you can get through walls a little bit better, you know, like, so it's like that weird, you know. It's the tiny little silicon device with the huge antenna hanging off of it.
By design, there's a tiny size. You already sacrificed the performance of antenna.
Yeah.
And also the good thing is AT&T, they renewed to test the standard for the KM1 tiny size. They have two different category. Big size, you have to achieve the 20 dB or 18 dB output. Mm-hmm. We call them TRP. But for the tiny size, like they put the dimension less than 20, about 20 millimeter, something like this, centimeter, like this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was only needed 12 dBm outputs, which is very good for the.
Right.
It's easy to achieve.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. There's a lot of really interesting things, and I really appreciate the fact that you you know, came here to record with me and, you know, give me feedback on the design. That's really valuable.
Yeah.
Roy, where could people, so if people are interested in building their own designs, where could people find information about you or using Quicktel parts or, you know, getting design reviews and things like that?
Yeah. Okay. I have my email right here. So, and it's at the very beginning. So this is my email.
Okay.
And also we have, in our website, we have the inform at Quicktel.com. Mm-hmm. So we have sales, North America sales at Quicktel.com. So we are easily approached, and we have more than 10 engineers in based on local based. Mm-hmm. We can support you in real time, and we have a very strong team here every day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Roy, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to implementing the feedback you gave and getting some more, getting these boards back and trying them out. So thanks.
Yeah, my brush too. Yeah, it's my first time, but it's impressive. And it's very very exciting.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that was episode 6 of Contextual Electronics Podcast. A little bit different than the other ones. You know, it was more of Roy helping me, and I realize that's a little different. It was less pointed questions about Roy's background, and usually we try and get more of a feel for what the guest is doing. But Roy was such a great sport to play along, and I really appreciate him giving me that feedback and giving me the advice. If you want to reach Roy, we'll try and put the contact info in the show notes. If you are listening to this and you want to see some of the diagrams and the things that that came up in this episode, those will also be linked in the show notes. Of course, if you want to, you can always go and sign up as part of Contextual Electronics. The Contextual Electronics people have seen this entire design process, and they actually have seen me make these some of these mistakes in real time, or oversights, let's call them. Maybe not mistakes. And that's kind of the thing that we try and do with Contextual Electronics. We don't just try and show all of the stuff like we are here. We try and show the entire design process. And that's kind of the idea of the course, that you're seeing as I'm making these decisions, as I'm doing part placement, part choice, all of these things, and then eventually, you know, coding, and we're into the build and the coding and the troubleshooting, all of these different steps. We're trying to bring forward all of the things about electronics that might not be obvious from the outset. And this is from my perspective as well, right? So as someone who started from no knowledge at all to moving to where I am now, 15 years in, I'm trying to bring the things that were super confusing to me to the forefront. And so hopefully that's useful for you. If you like that, you can always go and sign up over at contextualelectronics.com. We just enabled a free week for anyone who wants to try it out. So go and if you just sign up on contextualelectronics.com, that first week's for free. You can cancel anytime before that first week is up, and you can check out the content for free. And we hope you like it. If you do that, go check out the forum. There's also forum posts associated with every single episode of Contextual Electronics Podcast. So if you have any comments about this, you can always go and comment over there as well. The forum is free for all and open to all. And there's some really great people that help answer your questions about general electronics. And we're trying to build a community up so that more people get into the electronics industry and try this stuff out, because that's what we really like here. So that's all for now. We'll be back with more episodes of the Contextual Electronics Podcast. In the meantime, please tell your friends, share the podcast, tell other people, give us reviews, anything you can do to support us. We really appreciate it. Thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next one.